25. At the Griti, the Grand Maestro seated them at the table which was beside the window that looked out on the Grand Canal. There was no one else in the dining room. The Grand Maestro was festive and well with the morning. He took his ulcers day by day, and his heart the same way. When they did not hurt, he did not hurt either. "Your pitied compatriot eats in bed at his hotel, my colleague tells me," he confided to the colonel. "We may have a few Belgians. The bravest of these were the Belgians," he quoted. "There is a pair of Pescecani from you know where, but they are exhausted and I believe they will eat as pigs in their room." "An excellent situation report," the colonel said. "Our problem, Grand Maestro, is that I have already eaten in my room, as Pitted does, and as the Pescecani will. But this lady, young girl," interrupted the Grand Maestro with his whole face smile. He was feeling very good since it was a completely new day. "This very young lady wants a breakfast to end breakfasts." "I understand," the Grand Maestro said, and he looked at Renata and his heart rolled over as a porpoise does in the sea. It is a beautiful movement, and only a few people in this world can feel it and accomplish it. "What do you want to eat, daughter?" the colonel asked, looking at her early morning, unretouched dark beauty.
"Everything."
"Would you give any suggestions?"
"Tea instead of coffee, and whatever the Grand Maestro can salvage."
"It won't be salvage, daughter," said the Grand Maestro.
"I'm the one who calls her daughter."
"I said it honestly," the Grand Maestro said.
"We can make or fabrica rognons, grilled with champignons dug by people I know, or raised in damp cellars. There can be an omelette with truffles dug by pigs of distinction. There can be real Canadian bacon from maybe Canada, even."
"Wherever that is,"
the girl said happily and unillusioned. "Wherever that is," said the colonel seriously. "I know damn well where it is. I think we should stop the jokes now and get to the breakfast."
"If it is not unmaidenly, I think so too. Mine is a decanted flask of the Valpolicella."
"Nothing else?"
"Bring me one ration of the alleged Canadian bacon," the colonel said. He looked at the girl since they were alone now, and he said, "How are you, my dearest?"
"Quite hungry, I suppose. But thank you for being good for so long a time."
"It was easy," the colonel told her in Italian. 26. They sat there at the table and watched the early, stormy light over the canal. The gray had turned to a yellow gray now with the sun, and the waves were working against the outgoing tide.
"Mummy says she can't live here too long at any time because there are no trees," the girl said. "That's why she goes to the country."
"That's why everyone goes to the country," the colonel said. "We could plant a few trees if we found a place with a big enough garden."
"I like Lombardy poplars and plane trees the best, but I am still quite uneducated."
"I like them and cypresses and chestnut trees, the real chestnut and the horse chestnut. But you will never see trees, daughter, until we go to America. Wait till you see a white pine or a ponderosa pine."
"Will we see them when we make the long trip and stop at all the filling stations or comfort stations or whatever they are called?"
"Lodges and tourist camps," the colonel said. "Those others we stop at, but not for the night."
"I want so much for us to roll up to a comfort station and plank down my money and tell them to fill her up and check the oil mac, the way it is in American books or in the films."
"That's a filling station."
"Then what is a comfort station?"
"Where you go, you know."
"Oh," the girl said and blushed. "I'm sorry. I want to learn American so much, but I suppose I shall say barbarous things the way you do sometimes in Italian."
"It is an easy language. The further west you go, the straighter and easier it becomes." The Grand Maestro brought the breakfast, and the odor of it, although it did not spread through the room due to the silver covers on the dishes, came to them steady, and as broiled bacon and kidneys, with the dark, lusterless smell of grilled mushrooms added.
"It looks lovely," the girl said. "Thank you very much, Grand Maestro." "Should I talk American?" she asked the colonel.
She extended her hand to the Grand Maestro lightly and fastly, so that it darted as a rapier does, and said,
"Put it there, pal. This grub is tops."
The Grand Maestro said, "Thank you, my lady."
"Should I have said chow instead of grub?"
the girl asked the colonel. "They're really interchangeable."
"Did they talk like that out west when you were a boy? What would you say at breakfast?"
Breakfast was served or offered up by the cook. He would say, "Come and get it, you sons of bitches, or I'll throw it away."
"I must learn that for in the country. Sometimes when we have the British ambassador and his dull wife for dinner, I will teach the footman who will announce dinner to say, 'Come and get it, you son of bitches, or we will throw it away.'"
"He'd devaluate," the colonel said. "At any rate, it would be an interesting experiment."
"Tell me something I can say in true American to the pitied one if he comes in. I will just whisper it in his ear as though I were making a rendezvous, as they did in the old days."
"It would depend on how he looks. If he's very dejected-looking, you might whisper to him, 'Listen, Mac, you hired out to be tough, didn't you?'"
"That's lovely,"
she said, and repeated it in a voice she had learned from Ida Lupino.
"Can I say it to the Grand Maestro?"
"Sure, why not? Grand Maestro." The Grand Maestro came over and leaned forward attentively.
"Listen, Mac, you hired out to be tough, didn't you?"
The girl hard-worded him. "I did indeed," the Grand Maestro said.
"Thank you for stating it so exactly.
If that one comes in and you wish to speak to him after he has eaten, just whisper in his ear, 'Wipe the egg off your chin, Jack, and straighten up and fly right.'"
"I'll remember it and I'll practice it at home."
"What are we going to do after breakfast?"
"Should we go up and look at the picture and see if it is of any value? I mean, any good in daylight?"
"Yes," the colonel said. 27. Upstairs, the room was already done, and the colonel, who had anticipated a possible messiness of locale, was pleased. "Stand by at once," he said, then remembered to add, "Please." She stood by it, and he looked at it from where he had looked at it last night. "There's no comparison, of course," he said. "I don't mean likeness. The likeness is excellent."
"Was there supposed to be a comparison?" the girl asked, and swung her head back and stood there with the black sweater of the portrait.
"Of course not. But last night, and at first light, I talked to the portrait as though it were you."
"That was nice of you, and shows it has served some useful purpose."
They were lying now on the bed, and the girl said to him,
"Don't you ever close windows?"
"No, do you?"
"Only when it rains."
"How much alike are we?"
"I don't know. We never had much of a chance to find out."
"We've never had a fair chance, but we've had enough of a chance for me to know." "And when you know, what the hell have you got?" the colonel asked.
"I don't know. Something better than there is, I suppose."
"Sure, we ought to try for that. I don't believe in limited objectives. Sometimes you're forced to, though."
"What is your great sorrow?"
"Other people's orders," he said. "What's yours?"
"You."
"I don't want to be a sorrow. I've been a sorry son of a bitch many times, but I never was anybody's sorrow."
"Well, you are mine now."
"All right," he said. "We'll take it that way."
"You're nice to take it that way. You're very kind this morning. I'm so ashamed about how things are. Please hold me very close and let's not talk or think about how things might have been different."
"Daughter, that's one of the few things I know how to do."
"You know many, many things. Don't say such a thing."
"Sure," the colonel said. "I know how to fight forwards and how to fight backwards and what else?"
"About pictures and about books and about life."
"That's easy. You just look at the pictures without prejudice. And you read the books with as open a mind as you have, and you live life."
"Don't take off your tunic, please."
"All right."
You do anything when I say please.
I have done things without.
Not very often.
No, the colonel agreed. Please is a pretty word.
Please, please, please.
Per piacere. It means for pleasure. I wish we always talked Italian.
We could in the dark, although there are things that say better in English. I love you, my last true and only love, she quoted. When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed, and out of the cradle endlessly rocking. And come and get it, you sons of bitches, or I'll throw it away. You don't want those in other languages, do you, Richard?
No.
Kiss me again, please.
Unnecessary, please.
I would probably end up as an unnecessary please myself. That is the good thing about you going to die, that you can't leave me.
That's a little rough, the colonel said. Watch your beautiful mouth a little on that.
I get rough when you get rough, she said. You wouldn't want me to be completely otherwise.
I would not want you to be in any way other than you are. And I love you truly, finally, and for good.
You say nice things very clearly sometimes. What was it happened with you and your wife, if I may ask?
She was an ambitious woman, and I was away too much.
You mean she went away from ambition when you only were away from duty?
Sure, the colonel said, and remembered, as unbitterly as he could, she had more ambition than Napoleon and about the talent of the average high school valedictorian.
Whatever that is, the girl said. But let's not speak about her. I'm sorry I asked the question. She must be sad that she is not with you.
No, she's too conceited ever to be sad, and she married one to advance herself in army circles and have better contacts for what she considered her profession or her art. She was a journalist.
But they are dreadful, the girl said.
I agree.
But you couldn't have married a woman journalist that kept on being that.
I told you I made mistakes, the colonel said.
Let's talk about something nice.
Let's.
But that was terrible. How could you have done such a thing?
I don't know. I could tell you in detail, but let's skip it.
Please, let's skip it. But I had no idea it was something as awful as that. You wouldn't do such a thing now, would you?
I promise you, my sweet.
But you don't ever write to her?
Of course not.
You wouldn't tell her about this so she could write about it?
No. I told her about things once, and she wrote about them. But that was in another country, and besides, the wench is dead.
Is she really dead?
Deader than Phoebus the Phoenician, but she doesn't know it yet.
What would you do if we were together in the piazza and you saw her?
I'd look straight through her to show her how dead she was.
Thank you very much, the girl said. You know that another woman, or a woman in memory, is a terrible thing for a young girl to deal with when she is still without experience.
There isn't any other woman, the colonel told her, and his eyes were bad and remembering. Nor is there any woman of memory.
Thank you very much, the girl said. When I look at you, I believe it truly. But please never look at me nor think of me like that.
Should we hunt her down and hang her to a high tree? The colonel said with anticipation.
No, let us forget her.
She is forgotten, the colonel said. And strangely enough, she was. It was strange because she had been present in the room for a moment, and she had very nearly caused a panic, which is one of the strangest things there is, the colonel thought. He knew about panics. But she was gone now, for good and forever, cauterized, exorcised, and with the 11 copies of her reclassification papers, in which was included the formal notarized act of divorcement in triplicate. She is forgotten, the colonel said. It was quite true.
I'm so pleased, the girl said. I don't know why they ever let her into the hotel.
We're enough alike, the colonel said. We better not carry it too goddamn far.
You can hang her if you wish, because she is why we cannot marry.
She's forgotten, the colonel told her. Maybe she will take a good look at herself in the mirror sometime and hang herself.
Now that she is out of the room, we should wish her no bad luck. But as a good Venetian, I wish that she were dead.
So do I, the colonel said. And now, since she is not, let us forget her for keeps.
For keeps and for always, the girl said. I hope that is the correct diction. Or in Spanish, para siempre.
Para siempre and his brother, the colonel said. 28. They lay together now and did not speak, and the colonel felt her heartbeat. It is easy to feel a heartbeat under a black sweater knitted by someone in the family, and her dark hair lay long and heavy over his good arm. It isn't heavy, he thought. It is lighter than anything there is. She lay, quiet and loving, and whatever it was that they possessed was in complete communication. He kissed her on the mouth, gently and hungrily, and then it was as though they were static suddenly when communications had been perfect.
Richard, she said, I'm sorry about things.
Never be sorry, the colonel said. Never discuss casualties, daughter.
Say it again.
Daughter.
Will you tell me some happy things I can have for during the week and some more of war for my education?
Let's skip war.
No, I need it for my education.
I do too, the colonel said, not maneuvers. You know, in our army once, a general officer through chicanery obtained the plan of the maneuver. He anticipated every move of the enemy force and comported himself so brilliantly that he was promoted over many better men. And that was why we got smacked one time. That and the prevalence of weekends.
We're on a weekend now.
I know, the colonel said. I can still count up to 7.
But are you bitter about everything?
No, it is just that I am 100 years old and I know things.
Tell me something more about Paris, because I love to think of you in Paris in the week.
Daughter, why don't you lay off Paris?
But I've been in Paris, and I will go back there again, and I want to know. It is the loveliest city in the world, next to our own, and I want to know some things truly to take with me.
We will go together, and I will tell you there.
Thank you, but tell me a little now for this week only.
Leclerc was a high-born jerk, as I think that I've explained. Very brave, very arrogant, and extremely ambitious. He is dead, as I said.
Yes, you told me.
They say you should never speak ill of the dead, but I think it is the best time to speak truly of them. I've never said anything of a dead that I would not say to his face, and he added, in spades.
Let's not talk about him. I have reclassified him in my mind.
What do you want, then? Picturesque?
Yes, please. I have bad taste from reading the illustrated papers. But I will read Dante all week while you are gone. I'll go to Mass each morning. That should be enough.
Go to Harry's before lunch, too.
I will, she said. Please tell some picturesque.
Don't you think we might better just go to sleep?
How can we go to sleep now when we have so little time? Feel this, she said, and pushed her whole head up under his chin until she forced his head back.
All right, I'll talk.
Give me your hand first to hold. I'll have it in my hand when I read the Dante and do the other things.
Dante was an execrable character, more conceited than Leclerc.
I know, but he did not write execrably.
No, Leclerc could fight, too, excellently.
Now tell me.
Her head was on his chest now, and the colonel said, Why did you not want me to take off the tunic?
I like to feel the buttons. Is it wrong?
I'll be a sad son of a bitch, the colonel said. How many people fought in your family?
Everybody, she said. Always. They were traders as well, and several of them were doges of this city, as you know.
But they all fought?
All, she said, as far as I know.
Okay, the colonel said. I'll tell you any goddamn thing you want to know.
Just something picturesque, as bad or worse than in the illustrated papers.
Domenica del Corriere or Tribuna Illustrata,
Worse, if possible.
Kiss me first. She kissed him kind and hard and desperately, and the colonel could not think about any fights or any picturesque or strange incidents. He only thought of her and how she felt, and how close life comes to death when there is ecstasy. And what the hell is ecstasy, and what's ecstasy's rank and serial number? And how does her black sweater feel? And who made all her smoothness and delight, and the strange pride and sacrifice and wisdom of a child? Yes, ecstasy is what you might have had, and instead you draw sleep's other brother. Death is a lot of shit, he thought. It comes to you in small fragments that hardly show where it has entered. It comes sometimes atrociously. It can come from unboiled water, an unpulled-up mosquito boot, or it can come with the great white-hot clanging roar we have lived with. It comes in small, cracking whispers that precede the noise of the automatic weapon. It can come with the smoke-emitting arc of the grenade or the sharp, cracking drop of the mortar. I have seen it come loosening itself from the bomb rack and falling with that strange curve. It comes in the metallic rending crash of a vehicle or the simple lack of traction on a slippery road. It comes in bed to most people. I know, like love's opposite number. I have lived with it nearly all my life, and the dispensing of it has been my trade. But what can I tell this girl now on this cold, windy morning in the Greedy Palace Hotel? What would you like to know, daughter? He asked her.
Everything.
All right, the colonel said. Here goes. 29. They lay on the pleasantly hard, new-made bed with their legs pressed tight against one another, and her head was on his chest and her hair spread across his old, hard neck. And he told her, we landed without much opposition. They had the true opposition at the other beach. Then we had to link up with the people who had been dropped and take and secure various towns, and then we took Cherbourg. This was difficult and had to be done very fast, and the orders were from a general called Lightning Joe that you never would have heard of. Good general.
Go on, please. You spoke about Lightning Joe before.
After Cherbourg, we had everything. I took nothing but an admiral's compass because I had a small boat at that time on Chesapeake Bay. But we had all the Wehrmacht stamped Martell, and some people had as much as 6 million German-printed French francs. They were good until a year ago, and at that time they were worth 50 to the dollar, and many a man has a tractor now instead of simply one mule who knew how to send them home through his S's or sometimes his G's. I never stole anything except the compass because I thought it was bad luck to steal unnecessarily in war. But I drank the cognac, and I used to try to figure out the different corrections on the compass when I had time. The compass was the only friend I had, and the telephone was my life. We had strung more wire than there are cunts in Texas.
Please keep telling me and be as little rough as you can. I don't know what the word means, and I don't want to know.
Texas is a big state, the colonel said. That is why I used it and its female population as a symbol. You cannot say more cunts than Wyoming because there are less than 30,000 there, perhaps. I'll make it 50. And there was a lot of wire, and you kept stringing it and rolling it up and stringing it again.
Go on.
We will cut to the breakthrough, the colonel said. Please tell me if this bores you.
No.
So we made the mucking breakthrough, the colonel said, and now his head was turned to her head, and he was not lecturing, he was confessing. The first day, most of them came over and dropped the Christmas tree ornaments that confused the other people's radar, and it was called off. We were ready to go, but they called it off. Quite properly, I'm sure. I love the very highest brass like I love the pigs, you know.
Tell it to me and don't be bad.
Conditions were not propitious, the colonel said. So the second day we were for it, as our British cousins, who could not fight their way out of a wet tissue towel, say, and overcame the people of the wild blue yonder. They were still taking off from the fields, where they lived on that green-grassed aircraft carrier that they called England when we saw the first of them, shining, bright, and beautiful, because they'd scraped the invasion paint by then. Or maybe they had not. My memory is not exact about this part. Anyway, daughter, you could see the line of them going back toward the east further than you could see. It was like a great train. They were high in the sky and never more beautiful. I told my S2 that we should call them the Valhalla Express. Are you tired of it?
No, I can see the Valhalla Express. We never saw it in such numbers, but we saw it many times.
We were back 2,000 yards from where we were to take off from. You know what 2,000 yards is, daughter, in a war when you are attacking?
No, how could I?
Then the front part of the Valhalla Express dropped colored smoke and turned and went home. The smoke was dropped accurately and clearly showed the target, which was the Kraut positions. They were good positions, and it might have been impossible to move him out of them without something mighty and picturesque such as we were experiencing. Then, daughter, the next sections of the Valhalla Express dropped everything in the world on the Krauts and where they lived and worked to hold us up. Later, it looked as though all of the earth had erupted, and the prisoners that we took shook as a man shakes when his malaria hits him. They were very brave boys from the 6th Parachute Division, and they all shook and could not control it, though they tried. So you can see it was a good bombing, just the thing we always need in this life, make them tremble in the fear of justice and of might. So then, daughter, not to bore you, the wind was from the east and the smoke began to blow back in our direction. The heavies were bombing on the smoke line, and the smoke line was now over us. Therefore, they bombed us the same as they had bombed the Krauts. First, it was the heavies, and no one need ever worry about hell who was there that day. Then to really make the breakthrough good and to leave as few people as possible on either side, the mediums came over and bombed who was left. Then we made the breakthrough as soon as the Valhalla Express had gone home, stretching in its beauty and its majesty from that part of France to all over England. If man has a conscience, the colonel thought, he might think about air power sometime. Give me a glass of that Valpolicella, the colonel said, and remembered to add, please. Excuse me, he said. Be comfortable, honey dog, please. You asked me to tell you.
I'm not your honey dog. That must be someone else.
Correct. You're my last and true and only love. Is that correct? But you asked me to tell you.
Please tell me, the girl said. I'd like to be your honey dog if I knew how to do it. But I am only a girl from this town that loves you.
We'll operate on that, the colonel said. And I love you. I probably picked up that phrase in the Philippines.
Probably, the girl said. But I would rather be your straight girl.
You are, the colonel said, complete with handles and with the flag on top.
Please don't be rough, she said. Please love me true and tell me as true as you can without hurting yourself in any way.
I'll tell you true, he said. As true as I can tell, and let it hurt who it hurts. It is better that you hear it from me, if you have curiosity on this subject, than that you read it in some book with stiff covers.
Please don't be rough. Just tell me true and hold me tight, and tell me true until you are purged of it, if that can be.
I don't need to purge, he said, except heavies being used tactically. I have nothing against them if they use them right, even if they kill you. But for ground support, give me a man like Pete Quesada. There's a man who will boot them in.
Please.
If you ever want to quit a beat-up character like me, that guy could give you ground support.
You are not beat up, whatever that is, and I love you.
Please give me 2 tablets from that bottle and pour the glass of Valpolicella that you neglected to pour, and I will tell you some of the rest of it.
You don't have to. You don't have to tell me, and I know now it is not good for you, especially not the Valhalla Express day. I'm not an inquisitor, or whatever the female of inquisitor is. Let us just lie quietly and look out of the window and watch and see what happens on our Grand Canal.
Maybe we better. Who gives a damn about the war anyway?
You and me, maybe, she said and stroked his head. Here are the 2 things from the square bottle. Here is the glass of decanted vino. I'll send you better from our own estates. Please, let us sleep a little while. Please be a good boy and we just lie together and love each other. Please put your hand here.
My good or my bad?
You're bad, the girl said. The one I love and must think about all week. I cannot keep it like you keep the stones.
They're in the safe, the colonel said. In your name, he added.
Let's just sleep and not talk about any material things, nor any sorrows.
The hell with sorrows, the colonel said with his eyes closed and his head resting lightly on the black sweater that was his fatherland. You have to have some damned fatherland, he thought. Here is mine.
Why aren't you president? The girl asked. You could be an excellent president.
Me president? I served in the Montana National Guard when I was 16, but I never wore a bow tie in my life, and I am not, nor ever have been, an unsuccessful haberdasher. I have none of the qualifications for the presidency. I couldn't even head the opposition, even though I don't have to sit on telephone books to have my picture taken. Nor am I a no-fight general. Hell, I never was even at Schaefer. I couldn't even be an elder statesman. I'm not old enough. Now we are governed in some way by the dregs. We are governed by what you find in the bottom of dead beer glasses that whores have dunked their cigarettes in. The place has not even been swept out yet, and they have an amateur pianist beating on the box.
I don't understand it because my American is so incomplete. But it sounds awful. But don't be angry about it. Let me be angry for you.
Do you know what an unsuccessful haberdasher is?
No.
It is not discreditable. There are many of them in our country. There is at least one in every town. No, daughter, I am only a fighting soldier, and that is the lowest thing on earth. In that, you run for Arlington if they return the body. The family has a choice.
Is Arlington nice?
I don't know, the colonel said. I was never buried there.
Where would you like to be buried?
Up in the hills, he said, making a quick decision. On any part of the high ground where we beat them.
I suppose you should be buried on the grappa.
On the dead angle of any shell-pocked slope if they would graze cattle over me in the summertime.
Do they have cattle there?
Sure. They always have cattle where there is good grass in the summer. And the girls of the highest houses, the strong-built ones, the houses and the girls that resist the snow in winter, trap foxes in the fall after they bring the cattle down. They feed from pole-stacked hay.
And you don't want Arlington or Père Lachaise or what we have here?
Your miserable boneyard?
I know it is the most unworthy thing about the town, the city, rather. I learned to call cities towns from you. But I will see that you go where you wish to go, and I will go with you if you like.
I would not like. That is the one thing we do alone, like going to the bathroom.
Please do not be rough.
I meant that I would love to have you with me. But it is very egotistical and an ugly process. He stopped and thought truly, but off-key, and said, No, you get married and have 5 sons and call them all Richard.
The lion-hearted,
the girl said, accepting the situation without even a glance, and playing what there was she held as you put down all the cards, having counted exactly. The crap-hearted, the colonel said, the unjust, bitter criticizer who speaks badly of everyone.
Please don't be rough in talking, the girl said, and remember you speak worst of all about yourself. But hold me close as we can, and let's think about nothing.
He held her as close as he could, and he tried to think about nothing. 30. The colonel and the girl lay quietly on the bed, and the colonel tried to think of nothing, as he had thought of nothing so many times in so many places. But it was no good now. It would not work anymore because it was too late. They were not Othello and Desdemona, thank God, although it was the same town, and the girl was certainly better looking than the Shakespearean character, and the colonel had fought as many or more times than the garrulous Moor. They are excellent soldiers, he thought, the damned Moors. But how many of them have we killed in my time? I think we killed more than a generation if you count the final Moroccan campaign against Abdelkrim. And each one you have to kill separately. Nobody ever killed them in mass as we killed Krauts before they discovered Einheit. Daughter, he said, do you want me to really tell you, so you will know, if I am not rough telling it?
I would rather have you tell me than anything. Then we can share it.
It cuts pretty thin for sharing, the colonel said. It's all yours, daughter, and it's only the highlights. You wouldn't understand the campaigns in detail, and few others would. Rommel might, but they always had him under wraps in France, and besides, we had destroyed his communications. The two tactical air forces had, ours and the RAF. But I wish I could talk over certain things with him. I'd like to talk with him and with Ernst Udet.
Just tell me what you wish, and take this glass of Valpolicella and stop if it makes you feel badly. Or don't tell it at all.
I was a spare parts colonel at the start, the colonel explained carefully. They are hang-around colonels, which are given to a division commander to replace one that he may have killed or that are relieved. Almost none are killed, but many are relieved. All the good ones are promoted. Fairly fast when the thing starts to move, sort of like a forest fire.
Go on, please. Should you take your medicine?
The hell with my medicine, the colonel said, and the hell with Schaeff.
You explain that to me,
the girl said. I wish the hell you were a soldier with your straight, true brain and your beauty memory.
I would wish to be a soldier if I could fight under you.
Never fight under me, the colonel said. I'm cagey, but I'm not lucky. Napoleon wanted them lucky, and he was right.
We've had some luck.
Yes, the colonel said, good and bad.
But it was all luck.
Sure, the colonel said. But you can't fight on luck. It is just something that you need. The people who fought on luck are all gloriously dead, like Napoleon's horse cavalry.
Why do you hate cavalry? Almost all the good boys I know were in the three good regiments of cavalry or in the Navy.
I don't hate anything, daughter, the colonel said, and drank a little of the light, dry red wine, which was as friendly as the house of your brother, if you and your brother are good friends. I only have a point of view, arrived at after careful consideration and an estimate of their capabilities.
Are they not really good?
They are worthless, the colonel said. Then, remembering to be kind, added, in our time.
Every day is a disillusion.
No, every day is a new and fine illusion. But you can cut out everything phony about the illusion as though you would cut it with a straight-edge razor.
Please never cut me.
You're not cuttable.
Would you kiss me and hold me tight, and we both look at the Grand Canal where the light is lovely now, and you tell me more?
When they were looking out at the Grand Canal, where the light was indeed lovely, the colonel went on. I got a regiment because the commanding general relieved a boy that I had known since he was 18 years old. He was not a boy anymore, of course. It was too much regiment for him, and it was all the regiment I could ever have hoped for in this life, until I lost it, he added. Under orders, of course.
How do you lose a regiment?
When you're working around to get up on the high ground, and all you would have to do is send in a flag, and they would talk it over and come out if you were right. The professionals are very intelligent, and these krauts were all professionals, not the fanatics. The phone rings, and somebody calls from Corps who has his orders from Army, or maybe Army Group, or maybe even Schaeff, because they read the name of the town in a newspaper, possibly sent in from Spa by a correspondent, and the order is to take it by assault. It's important because it got into the newspapers. You have to take it. So you leave one company dead along a draw. You lose one company complete, and you destroy three others. The tanks get smacked even as fast as they could move, and they could move fast both ways. They hit them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Three men usually get out of the five that are inside, and they run like broken field runners that have been shaken loose in a play when you are Minnesota and the others are Beloit, Wisconsin. Do I bore you?
No. I do not understand the local allusions, but you can explain them when you care to. Please, keep on telling me.
You get into town and some handsome jerk puts an air mission on you. This mission might have been ordered and never canceled. Let's give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I'm just telling you about things in a general way. It's better not to be specific, and a civilian wouldn't understand it, not even you. This air mission does not help much, daughter, because maybe you cannot stay in the town because you've got too few people in, and by now you are digging them out of rubble or leaving them in rubble. There are two schools of thought on that. So they say to take it by assault. They repeat this. This has been rigidly confirmed by some politician in uniform who has never killed in his life, except with his mouth over the telephone or on paper, nor ever has been hit. Figure him as our next president if you want him. Figure him any way you like, but figure him and his people, the whole great business establishment, so far back that the best way to communicate with them rapidly would be by racing carrier pigeons. Except with the amount of security they maintain for their proper persons, they would probably have their anti-aircraft shoot the pigeons down, if they could hit them. So you do it again. Then I will tell you what it looks like. The colonel looked up at the play of light on the ceiling. It was reflected in part from the canal. It made strange but steady movements, changing as the current of a trout stream changes, but remaining. Still changing as the sun moved. Then he looked at his great beauty with her strange, dark, grown-up child's face that broke his heart, that he would be leaving before 1335, that was sure, and he said, "Let's not talk about the war, daughter."
"Please," she said, "please. Then I will have it all this week."
That's a short sentence. I mean using the word sentence as a jail sentence.
You don't know how long a week can be when you are 19.
Several times I have known how long an hour can be, the colonel said. I could tell you how long 2 minutes and a half can be.
Please tell me.
Well, I had 2 days leave in Paris between the Schnee-Eiffel fight and this one, and due to my friendship with one or two people, I was privileged to be present at some sort of a meeting where only the accredited and trusted were present. And General Walter Bedell Smith explained to all of us how easy the operation that later took the name of Hurtgen Forest would be. It was not really Hurtgen Forest. That was only a small sector. It was the Staatswald, and it was where the German High Command had figured exactly to fight after Aachen had been taken and the road into Germany breached. I hope I'm not boring you.
You never bore me. Nothing about fighting bores me except lies.
You're a strange girl.
Yes, she said. I've known that for quite a long time.
Would you really like to fight?
I don't know if I could do it, but I could try if you taught me.
I'll never teach you. I'll just tell you anecdotes.
Sad stories of the death of kings.
No, GIs, somebody christened them. God, how I hate that word and how it was used. Comic book readers. All from some certain place. Most of them there unwillingly, not all. But they all read a paper called The Stars and Stripes, and you had to get your unit into it or you were unsuccessful as a commander. I was mostly unsuccessful. I tried to like the correspondents, and there were some very good ones present at this meeting. I will not name names because I might omit some fine ones, and that would be unjust. There were good ones that I don't remember. Then there were draft dodgers. Phonies who claimed they were wounded if a piece of spent metal ever touched them, people who wore the Purple Heart from Jeep accidents, insiders, cowards, liars, thieves, and telephone racers. There were a few deads missing from this briefing. They had deads, too, a big percentage. But none of the deads were present, as I said. They had women at it, though in wonderful uniforms.
But how did you ever marry one?
By mistake, as I explained before.
Go on and tell me.
There were more maps in the room than our Lord could read on his best day, the colonel continued. There were the big picture, the semi-big picture, and the super-big picture. All these people pretended to understand them, as did the boys with the pointers, a sort of half-assed billiard cue that they used for explanation.
Don't say rough words. I don't know even what half-assed means.
Shortened or abbreviated in an inefficient manner, the colonel explained, or deficient as an instrument or in character. It's an old word. You could probably find it in Sanskrit.
Please tell me.
What for? Why should I perpetuate ignominy just with my mouth?
I'll write it if you want. I can write truly what I hear or think. I would make mistakes, of course.
You're a lucky girl if you can write truly what you hear or think. But don't you ever write one word of this. He resumed. The place is full of correspondents dressed according to their taste. Some are cynical and some are extremely eager. To ride herd on them and to wield the pointers, there is a group of pistol slappers. We call a pistol slapper a non-fighting man, disguised in uniform, or you might even call it costume, who gets an erection every time the weapon slaps against his thighs. Incidentally, daughter, the weapon, not the old pistol, the real pistol, has missed more people in combat than probably any weapon in the world. Don't ever let anyone give you one unless you want to hit people on the head with it in Harry's bar.
I never wanted to hit anyone, except perhaps Andrea.
If you ever hit Andrea, hit him with the barrel, not with the butt. The butt is awfully slow and it misses, and if it lands, you get blood on your hands when you put the gun away. Also, please do not ever hit Andrea because he is my friend. I do not think he would be easy to hit either.
No, I do not think so either. Please tell me some more about the meeting or the assembly. I think I could recognize a pistol slapper now, but I would like to be checked out more thoroughly.
Well, the pistol slappers and all the pride of their pistol slappery were awaiting the arrival of the great general who was to explain the operation. The correspondents were muttering or twittering, and the intelligent ones were glum or passively cheerful. Everybody sat on folding chairs as for a Chautauqua lecture. I'm sorry about these local terms, but we are a local people. In comes the general. He is no pistol slapper, but a big businessman, an excellent politician, the executive type. The army is the biggest business at that moment in the world. He takes the half-assed pointer and he shows us with complete conviction and without forebodings exactly what the attack will be, why we are making it, and how facilely it will succeed. There is no problem.
Go on, the girl said. Please let me fill your glass, and you, please look at the light on the ceiling.
Fill it, and I'll look at the light, and I will go on. This high-pressure salesman, and I say this with no disrespect, but with admiration for all his talents, or his talent, also told what we would have of the necessary. There would be no lack of anything. The organization called SHAPE was then based on a town named Versailles outside of Paris. We would attack to the east of Aachen, a distance of some 380 kilometers from where they were based. An army can get to be huge, but you can close up a little bit. They finally went as far forward as Reims, which was 240 kilometers from the fighting. That was many months later. I understand the necessity of the big executive being removed from contact with his working people. I understand about the size of the army and the various problems. I even understand logistics, which is not difficult. But no one ever commanded from that far back in history.
Tell me about the town.
I'll tell you, the colonel said. But I don't want to hurt you.
You'll never hurt me. We are an old town and we had fighting men always. We respect them more than all others, and I hope we understand them a little. We also know they are difficult. Usually, as people, they are very boring to women.
Do I bore you?
What do you think?
The girl asked. I bore myself, daughter.
I don't think you do, Richard. You would not have done something all your life if you were bored by it. Don't lie to me, please, darling, when we have so little time.
I won't.
Don't you see you need to tell me things to purge your bitterness?
I know I'd tell them to you.
Don't you know I want you to die with the grace of a happy death? Oh, I'm getting all mixed up. Don't let me get too mixed up.
I won't, daughter.
Tell me some more, please, and be just as bitter as you want.
31. Listen, daughter, the colonel said. Now we will cut out all references to glamour and to high brass, even from Kansas, where the brass grows higher than Osage orange trees along your own road. It bears a fruit you can't eat, and it is purely Kansan. Nobody but Kansans ever had anything to do with it, except maybe us who fought. We ate them every day. Osage oranges, he added, only we called them K-rations. They weren't bad. C-rations were bad. 10-1s were good. So we fought. It is dull, but it is informative. This is the way it goes if anyone is ever interested, which I doubt. It goes like this. 1300, Red, S3. White jumped off on time. Red said they were waiting to tie in behind White. 1305, that is 1 o'clock and 5 minutes after in the afternoon, if you can remember that, daughter. Blue, S3. You know what an S3 is, I hope, says. Let us know when you move. Red said they were waiting to tie in behind White. You can see how easy it is, the colonel told the girl. Everybody ought to do it before breakfast.
We cannot all be combat infantrymen, the girl told him softly. I respect it more than anything except good, honest flyers. Please talk. I'm taking care of you.
Good flyers are very good and should be respected as such, the colonel said. He looked up at the light on the ceiling, and he was completely desperate at the remembrance of his loss of his battalions and of individual people. He could never hope to have such a regiment ever. He had not built it, he had inherited it, but for a time it had been his great joy. Now every second man in it was dead, and the others nearly all were wounded, in the belly, the head, the feet or the hands, the neck, the back, the lucky buttocks, the unfortunate chest, and the other places. Tree-burst wounds hit men where they would never be wounded in open country. And all the wounded were wounded for life. It was a good regiment, he said. You might even say it was a beautiful regiment until I destroyed it under other people's orders.
But why do you have to obey them when you know better?
In our army you obey like a dog, the colonel explained. You always hope you have a good master.
What kind of masters do you get?
I've only had two good ones so far. After I reached a certain level of command, many nice people, but only two good masters.
Is that why you are not a general now? I would love it if you were a general.
I'd love it too, the colonel said, but maybe not with the same intensity.
Would you try to sleep, please, to please me?
Yes, the colonel said.
You see, I thought that if you slept, you might get rid of them, just being asleep.
Yes. Thank you very much, he said. There was nothing to it, gentlemen. All a man need ever do is obey. 32.
You slept quite well for a time, the girl told him, lovingly and gently. Is there anything you would like me to do?
Nothing, the colonel said. Thank you. Then he turned bad and he said, Daughter, I could sleep good straight up and down in the electric chair with my pants slit and my hair clipped. I sleep as and when I need it.
I can never be like that,
the girl said sleepily.
I sleep when I am sleepy.
You're lovely, the colonel told her, and you sleep better than anyone ever slept.
I'm not proud of it,
the girl said very sleepily.
It is just something that I do.
Do it, please.
No. Tell me very low and soft and put your bad hand in mine.
The hell with my bad hand, the colonel said. Since when was it so bad?
It's bad, the girl said. Badder or worse than you will ever know. Please tell me about combat without being too brutal.
An easy assignment, the colonel said. I'll skip the times. The weather is cloudy and the place is 986342. What's the situation? We are smoking the enemy with artillery and mortar. S3 advises that S6 wants Red to button up by 1700. S6 wants you to button up and use plenty of artillery. White reports that they are in fair shape. S6 informs that A Company will swing around and tie in with B. B Company was stopped first by enemy action and stayed there of their own accord. S6 isn't doing so good. This is unofficial. He wants more artillery, but there isn't any more artillery. You wanted combat for what? I don't know really why. Or really know why. Who wants true combat? But here it is, daughter, on the telephone, and later I will put in the sounds and smells and anecdotes about who was killed when and where, if you want them.
I only want what you will tell me.
I'll tell you how it was, the colonel said, and General Walter Bedell Smith doesn't know how it was yet, though probably I'm wrong, as I have been so many times.
I'm glad we don't have to know him or the Nylon Smooth Man, the girl said.
We won't have to know them this side of hell, the colonel assured her, and I will have a detail guarding the gates of hell so that no such characters enter.
You sound like Dante,
she said sleepily. I am Mr. Dante, he said, for the moment. And for a while he was, and he drew all the circles. They were as unjust as Dante's, but he drew them. 33. I will skip the detailed part since you are justifiably and should be sleepy, the colonel said. He watched again the strange play of the light on the ceiling. Then he looked at the girl, who was more beautiful than any girl that he had ever seen, ever. He had seen them come and go, and they go faster when they go than any other thing that flies. They can go faster from Fair Beauty to the knocker's shop than any other animal, he thought. But I believe that this one could hold the pace and stay the course. The dark ones last the best, he thought. And look at the bony structure in that face. This one has a fine bloodline, too, and she could go forever. Most of our own lovely beauties come from soda counters, and they do not know their grandfather's last name unless maybe it was Schultz or Schlitz, he thought. This is the wrong attitude to take, he said to himself, since he did not wish to express any of these sentiments to the girl, who would not like them anyway, and was soundly sleepy now the way a cat is when it sleeps within itself. Sleep well, my dearest lovely, and I will just tell it for nothing. The girl was asleep, still holding his bad hand that he despised, and he could feel her breathe as the young breathe when they are easily asleep. The colonel told her all about it, but he did not utter it. So after I had the privilege of hearing General Walter Bedell Smith explain the facility of the attack, we made it. There was the Big Red One, who believed their own publicity. There was the Ninth, which was a better division than we were. There was us, who had always done it when they asked for you to do it. We had no time to read comic books, and we had no time for practically nothing because we always moved before first light. This is difficult, and you have to throw away the big picture and be a division. We wore a four-leaf clover, which meant nothing except among ourselves, who all loved it. And every time I ever see it, the same thing happens in my inner guts. Some people thought it was ivy, but it was not. It was a four-leaf clover disguised as ivy. The orders were that we would attack with the Big Red One, the 1st Infantry Division of the Army of the United States, and they and their calypso-singing PRO never let you forget it. He was a nice guy, and it was his job. But you get fed up with horse shit unless you like the aroma or the taste. I never liked it, although I loved to walk through cow shit when I was a kid and feel it between my toes. But horse shit bores you. It bores me very rapidly, and I can detect it at over 1,000 yards. So we attacked, the three of us in line, exactly where the Germans wished us to attack. We will not mention General Walter Bedell Smith any further. He is not the villain. He only made the promises and explained how it would go. There are no villains, I presume, in a democracy. He was only just as wrong as hell. Period. He added in his mind. The patches had all been removed even as far back as the rear echelon so that no Kraut would know that it was us, the three he knew so well, who were going to attack. We were going to attack with the three of us in line and nothing in reserve. I won't try to explain what that means, daughter, but it isn't any good. And the place we were going to fight in, which I had taken a good look at, was going to be Passchendaele with tree bursts. I say that too much, but I think it too much. The poor bloody 28th, which was up on our right, had been bogged down for some time, and so there was pretty accurate information available about what conditions in those woods were going to be like. I think we could conservatively describe them as unfavorable. Then we were ordered to commit one regiment before the attack started. That means that the enemy will get at least one prisoner, which makes all the taking off of the divisional patches silly. They would be waiting for us. They would be waiting for the old four-leaf clover people who would go straight to hell like a mule and do it for 105 days. Figures, of course, mean nothing to civilians. Nor do the characters from Shafe we never saw ever in these woods. Incidentally, and of course these occurrences are always incidental at the Shafe level, the regiment was destroyed. It was no one's bloody fault, especially not the fault of the man who commanded it. He was a man I would be glad to spend half my time in hell with, and may yet. It certainly would be odd if instead of going to hell, as we always counted on, we should go to one of those kraut joints like Valhalla and not be able to get along with the people. But maybe we could get a corner table with Rommel and Udet, and it would be just like any winter sports hotel. It will probably be hell, though, and I don't even believe in hell. Well, anyway, this regiment was rebuilt, as American regiments always are, by the replacement system. I won't describe it since you can always read about it in a book by somebody who was a replacement. It boils down or distills to the fact you stay in until you are hit badly or killed or go crazy and get section-8ed. But I guess it is logical and as good as any other given the difficulties of transport. However, it leaves a core of certain unkilled characters who know what the score is, and no one of these characters liked the look of these woods much. You could sum up their attitude in this phrase: "Don't shit me, Jack." And since I had been an unkilled character for around 28 years, I could understand their attitude. But they were soldiers, so most of them got killed in those woods and when we took the three towns that looked so innocent and were really fortresses. They were just built to tempt us, and we had no word on them at all. To continue to use the silly parlance of my trade, this could or could not be faulty intelligence.
"I feel terrible about the regiment," the girl said.
She had wakened and spoken straight from sleep. "Yes," said the colonel. "So do I. Let's drink to it once. Then you go to sleep, daughter, please. The war is over and forgotten." "Please don't think that I am conceited, daughter," he said without speaking. His true love was sleeping again. She slept in a different way than his career girl had slept. He did not like to remember how the career girl slept, yet he did. But he wanted to forget it. She did not sleep pretty, he thought, not like this girl who slept as though she were awake and alive, except she was asleep. "Please sleep well," he thought. "Who the hell are you to criticize career girls?" he thought. "What miserable career did you attempt and have failed at?" "I wished to be, and was, a general officer in the Army of the United States. I have failed, and I speak badly of all who have succeeded." Then his contrition did not last, and he said to himself, "Except the brown nosers, the 5 and 10 and 20 percenters, and all the jerks from wherever who never fought and hold commands. I killed several men from the academy at Gettysburg. That was the big kill day of all kill days, when there was a certain amount of opposition by both sides. Don't be bitter. They killed General McNair by mistake the day the Valhalla Express came over. Quit being bitter. People from the academy were killed, and there are statistics to prove it. How can I remember if I'm not bitter? Be as bitter as you want. And tell the girl now, silently, and that will not hurt her ever because she is sleeping so lovely." He said "lovely" to himself, since his thinking was often ungrammatical.
This ends Disc 5.